Hey guys, welcome to episode 260 of the podcast with my guest, Kelsey Scott. I just want to say a couple of things before the beginning of the episode. We recorded this quite clearly from the episode before the events of last Sunday night in Las Vegas. And, you know, I just felt like I wanted to acknowledge that it's so strange to me that that it's come to the point now where things like this seem to happen so frequently. And I'm not saying anything new here. I'm sure many people more qualified and more intelligent than I have said something similar in various outlets. But this feels so commonplace now that you feel like everything should just sort of stop and the world should stand still in acknowledgement of what's happened, and yet things just keep going. And I'm still going to New York Comic Con, and I'm still promoting the shows that I'm on, and I'm still trying to entertain people by doing live shows while I'm there. And that's really a struggle. It's just a confusing, strange time. And I'm sure that's how you all feel as well. So for those of you who follow me on social media and stuff, you know that I'm not hugely political there. And so I'm not saying a ton about what's going on, but rest assured, it's something that I think about every day, most of the day, and I'm taking action locally, and I encourage you to do the same. I guess that's it. Sorry, I just felt like I needed to opine there. I needed to do it somewhere because I don't know that I'm going to take to Twitter and talk about this stuff. It's not my favorite medium to do that. Anyway, gosh, okay, thanks for bearing with me on that. I feel so incredibly lucky to get to do what I do and to be connected to listeners like you as part of that. It's just a huge bonus for me in my world, my work world and my personal world. I am really looking forward to having some laughs and hugging some people in New York. I've got shows on Friday night. One is a Plan 9 reading that I've told you about at the Littlefield Theater in Brooklyn, and then I have another show right after that that I'm doing with Akron Blacker and a bunch of great Thrilling Adventure Hour types that's Star Wars based because they wrote a Star Wars book that's coming out. I will also be, of course, tomorrow, Thursday, doing a ton of stuff for Stand Against Evil, including a panel at New York Comic Con. So check the schedule of the con if you're interested in that. And then I'll be doing Korra related stuff on Saturday with Dark Horse. And I'll be seeing Brian and Irene, too, who does the comics. So that's going to be great. And I'll be doing a signing as well. So that's a lot of information. This is one of my longer intros. I can't lie about that. And then I just want to thank Roberto and then my dear Nicole, who has totally redesigned JanetVarney.com. And although I need to get some updated information on all these appearances there, she's done a phenomenal job with the design, and she's just terrific. So if you ever need design work, let me know and I will put you straight to her. Okay, I'll talk to you guys soon. I hope you're doing okay. Thanks.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Just what I'm doing right now. Well, that was more of a song. That was less of a talk and
it's
more
okay.
of a song.
It's all right. No judgment.
Look, I even put some hand sanitizer. I mean, I don't know what I thought. I just got scared because while I feel like I don't have a huge germ paranoia, I do. I think my paranoia extends to getting other people sick. So, and by the way, again, I'm not convinced that I am even getting sick. I think it probably is allergies.
Uh-huh.
But my paranoia is so strong that I was like, oh God, what if?
But you have
she comes over
paranoia.
And then
it's for other people.
It's for other people.
That's great.
Because I don't get sick that often. So maybe if I got sick more, I'd be more nervous about it.
I don't think you should wish to get sick
more.
I guess that's also true.
Yeah, I feel like
no. In this scenario, I should leave things as they are and just have a compassionate heart.
I've got the hand sanitizer just in case.
I've got the hand sanitizer. I sanitized your microphone, even though I personally did not speak into it or breathe onto it or anything. I still was like, this seems like the right thing to do.
Totally get it. It was. It was absolutely the right thing to do.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to hear that I made a good decision. No, thank you.
Thank you.
No, but... Thank you, though.
I appreciate it.
Do you feel like you were a person who was trained in like mannerly, like manners? And was that important for you?
Well,
when
I'm
you
from
were
the South. So
there you go.
Yeah, there's a lot
it's
of
a
that,
whole different. You know? It can
we
be really
actually,
a whole
like
different
let the car in front of us. We say hello to people when we're walking by on the street, which was an interesting transition coming to LA.
Well, it could have been worse. You could have moved to New York. And it really could have been like, oh, everyone hates me. Where are you from in the South?
I'm from Atlanta.
Oh, yay. Yeah, love Atlanta. I'm home. There all the time, which I guess is true now for tons of actors.
Right,
but
exactly. There's so much production going on there now. Not when I was there, but now. Yeah,
I will
great.
Say, when did you move?
Oh, don't use numbers. Okay. I went to, I moved... Technically, when I went to school, because I kind of never came back. When I went to college, I just like never went back home. So I've been gone a very long time.
So you got used. You've had time to get used to the West
I mean,
Coast vibe.
Nowadays, people want me to actually claim Los Angeles, and I do claim it as my residence.
Right,
but my home.
Your
is
home's
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Yes,
I was just to make this all about me because let's face it, it is no. But when I was on a show called Dinner and a Movie that shot at TBS on Turner Studios, it was one of the very few like nothing was in Atlanta and so the fact that you know there were these little kind of hosted programs that were shot in Atlanta was so novel to me, and I was on it for 7 years. So over 7 years I was doing stuff there, and only towards the very end of me being there, which is almost 7 years ago now or six or five or something, did it start being like, oh, interesting, tax break, like something's starting to happen here where other people are coming. I remember being on, well, here's your answer. I remember being on, I think it was my last season that the show existed, flying there, and one like the head writer of The Walking Dead was on the same flight because it was that was just getting started, I think. And so that was really it was like, oh, the beginning of like, oh, other showbiz types on this flight
like
to Atlanta,
making their homes there.
Yeah, and then, Tyler Perry, I think his studio, he started building his studio again, like not so like I don't think there was that much stuff going on there when I was there, but then I went and recorded on a BET show, and I knew a lot of friends who were shooting stuff at his studio. But so
he was definitely starting a
one
trend.
Of the absolutely.
And now there's so many studios there; it's kind of ridiculous.
It's kind of ridiculous. And now, have you gone back there for work yet?
That's the odd thing. I have not worked in Atlanta as an I would say for film and television. I have gone back for stage, but I haven't worked in film and television in Atlanta since I lived there.
Yeah.
And not that like I went out for something and I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Somehow I don't
those
even get in the room for something that's shooting at home. And I'm like,
so
hey guys, I have a house there.
Hello.
You kind of don't have to pay for my hotel.
Yeah, totally.
Right.
Totally. Oh, that's so funny. Isn't that just the way?
It's always the way.
So that's a situation where potentially putting it out to the universe has not necessarily yielded results yet.
I don't, you know,
or,
I think
or
I
were you almost like,
committed
I'm okay,
to putting
yeah,
it out
I think
to
you
the
would
universe.
Be like, oh,
I think
it'd be really
to
easy.
Really like have a sit down with the universe and be like, okay,
yeah,
I'm actually serious about this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was going to ask you that. I was going to say if you feel like you have other examples where you do feel like those things have happened. And like mine, for example, the only reason I thought of that is because I had always wanted to go to Vancouver and I'd never been. And it started to like nag at me that I'd never been to Vancouver. And I was like, I think, God, I really want to go. Like maybe I should just get a ticket and go. And
just go, right?
And then I booked something like, you know, 3 weeks after I was like, I for sure really want to go to Vancouver. I booked my first thing that went.
You've got a main line after 3 weeks.
Well, but is it that
like
I think the same
5
thing?
5 months on wanting to do some action before I got Fear the Walking Dead. So I just kept saying, I really want to do something action. I really want to do something action. And then, you know, it happened.
That's
but
great,
it wasn't 3 weeks. So we're going to have a conversation to find exactly what kind of mojo
is.
You got working with the universe.
I got to be honest with you. My fear is it a situation where you do that with other things and they don't happen so you don't think about them because they
that's
didn't
true.
Come true. And then when something does kind of press the button that's like, hold on.
You're like, I totally did that.
Worked.
Like I did that.
Exactly.
I made that happen. Right.
Exactly. So I sort of was like projecting back going like, but what about like all the time? Like I do feel like I think I've been saying I'd love to do a Comic-Con in like England or Ireland or Scotland, nice. Everybody, for nice. Quite some time, and that has not happened. So there's a good experience. I mean, there's a good example of
you
it.
You know, 3 weeks, that was, it. Maybe it put you in a false sense of security.
Yeah, I know. Now, then I got cocky.
Your expectations are really, really high now.
Real
yeah.
cocky. So, okay, so you're from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Yes, I would say that is a very mannered city.
Yes.
I enjoy that about it very much. Very friendly.
Mm-hmm.
It's and when you came here for school, did you really
well,
feel that
school
kind of
in Florida?
Oh, okay, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, all right. So when you say yeah, you
right.
went
so I left
to
Atlanta,
school,
then went to Florida, then came down.
Gotcha, gotcha. Mm-hmm. And how did you find Florida? Like, how did you feel about that?
It was great. I was in Tallahassee, so it's kind of like South Georgia. It's not far enough into Florida where you really feel like I'm in a different state.
Yeah.
It was great. It was probably one of the few places in the world I've experienced that's hotter than Atlanta. Oh my gosh, Tallahassee. Just I remember taking showers in between classes. Like you'd go to class and then you'd walk someplace and you'd think, I need to bathe.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
What
and the humidity
to,
is so yeah. high.
Oh, God. Yeah. The humidity is what kills me. I'm mm-hmm. from Arizona, so I can't. Oh, yeah. So I still worry about when I'm breathing in humidity, my lungs and my brain are like, you're dying. Something's right. wrong. You're underwater. I have a little like fluttery, panicky feeling of like, ooh, this is, this isn't right. What was this? What drew you to Tallahassee? What was the school?
Well, I went to undergrad at Florida A&M and I went to grad at Florida State. But in terms of what drew me to Florida A&M, the journalism program.
Nice.
Because I was not going to go to college. My mom had to have a sit down with me because I wanted to go right to New York and I wanted to do Broadway. And I was like, Mom, I'm an actor.
Yeah.
I'm not going to college. I'm going right into my career. She's like, I'm an educator uh-huh. and you're going to college. So I'd always been interested in writing because my grandmother was an avid writer.
Nice.
And so I was looking for a program that I thought I would enjoy. And then FAMU definitely had it. So I was like, okay, I'll go to Tallahassee.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you kind of focus on? Like there are obviously a lot of aspects of journalism. Was there
broadcast?
Broadcast journalism.
Oh, yeah, that was kind
sense.
Of it's my way of still getting on television.
There you
right?
go. There
like,
you go.
I will do broadcast and I'll minor in theater.
Yeah.
That way,
yeah.
you know. It's not Broadway, but it's as close as I'm going to get for 4 years.
That makes sense. It's yeah. still a very, yeah, it's a very, it's a, that's a good compromising choice between your mom. Do you feel like your
okay.
mom, does your mom, does, if you, she's still with us, do you still have, does she have that sort of like, okay, well, listen, now I see that you, like, I got my thing, but I can see
oh,
that
well,
you were still headed that
then.
Way.
She did pass away some years ago, but she told me then, she was like, listen, if you get your degree, then after you graduate, anything you want to do, I am totally on board. I'm totally behind you. And she stuck to that. So,
nice. Yeah. Nice. What was she, what did she do as an educator?
She was a professor. She's an English mm-hmm. professor.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Both my parents were teachers. My mom was a professor. She taught French at the U of A and then she went to a private school and taught there.
Great.
And then my dad was always a senior public school English teacher, like his entire career. He started student teaching there when he was still in college and he stayed in basically, I think, like the same classroom for 25 years or however long.
Yeah,
until
my mom
retired.
Retired for 30 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those educators are dedicated.
Boy, they work so hard.
Yeah.
Oh, they work so hard. Yeah. Do you have siblings?
I have one sister, one older sister.
Mm-hmm. One older sister. Mm-hmm. And what was your teenage life like? What was your Atlanta teenager going to school life like?
It was good. And there's almost a 10-year gap between me and my sister. So
oh, okay. So
it
you're
was
like
almost
an only
like
child.
Growing up an only child.
Yeah,
right?
yeah, for
but
sure.
But then when I turned like 18 and 19, there was this really cool person that I liked who happened to be my sister.
Hell yeah.
And she didn't, you know, avoid me now because I wasn't like the pesky kid anymore.
You got
right.
cool.
So no. I had great teenage years though, because I was always into something artistic. I went to performing arts high school. I mean, the whole shebang. I was
doing
local theater. That's kind of how I got into the business. So it was kind of like living the life of the movie Fame on a smaller scale and without television cameras.
Uh-huh.
It was great.
That's
great.
That's impressive for a city that is very cultured and has like all kinds of great artistic stuff going mm-hmm. on, but isn't necessarily a feeder the way like Hollywood High
right.
or someplace in New York is.
Exactly.
What was the local theater like that you were doing? Were you?
Oh, it was great. The Alliance Theater is the largest theater in Atlanta. And so I started out kind of doing summer camp courses there. I think when I was, I don't know, like six or something like that. But I had been before that, I'd actually been public speaking because my grandmother, who was the writer, when she came to live with us after my grandfather passed away, she would write write like poetry and speeches, and then I would go around the community and then I would recite them. And so even before I could read, what she would do is that she would record herself reciting the speeches, and I'd play it over and over again until I memorized it, until I could read. So I was kind of up and doing stuff like that really, really early. And so it was always like, give me that little girl who did that thing and that thing. And that's kind of how my reputation grew. That little girl who did that thing at that thing.
Our little star.
Right, exactly.
So. Did you go to church?
I did.
Was there a performance element to church too?
In terms of my grandmother, because she used to write plays for the church. But it's funny because I'm baptized Catholic. My grandmother was Baptist. One of my best friends is Buddhist. Another is my dad is Jewish. So yeah. I had all kinds of influences.
Which
religiously.
Is kind
so
of great, right?
Yeah, so this is why I just now sit and talk to the universe. But
yeah, exactly. Like, I know.
I've seen you in all your faces.
Mm-hmm, so, absolutely.
But my grandmother would write plays for the church, and so I'd perform in that. And she started kind of like the oratorical club at the church. And yeah,
is there a form of worship when it comes to formally going to a place and engaging in that way that felt the most fun to you, or the most like interesting, or felt, or hit, you know, kind of felt like, oh, this does, or was it more about community?
Probably my grandmother's church, because you know, Catholicism is very regimented, which should actually appeal to me because I'm extremely type A and now have embraced it. So I'm proud of that.
Good for you.
Thank you. It took me a while. I fought it for
totally
a while.
Understood.
But it's very ordered, and you know, you have the little book that you can literally kind of like set your clock by in terms of how the masses are conducted. And across the street was my grandmother's church. And so I used to go with her on Sundays if I didn't go with my mom. And I just found it, a little more freeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I loved the music. I loved the idea that you couldn't set your clock by everything.
Yeah.
It just felt a little more, I guess it'd be the right brain versus the left brain.
No,
it
sure.
Felt much
sure.
more right brain to me.
Yeah.
So that was more appealing.
No, I had to go to, these guys know, I had to go to Mormon church with my mom. Mm-hmm. And I would go to other friends' churches with them and stuff, because there was this sort of sense of like, I'm curious about, I feel like in general, most of my friends were as disinterested in the religious side of it as I was. So there was this sort of curiosity, social curiosity of like, oh, what's your Jewish temple like? What's your Baptist church like? What's your Unitarian church like? I really had to think about
right.
that. I was like, universe, that's ours. And I think I sort of figured out pretty early on, like, oh, okay, well, Mormons kind of fall into this sort of in between where they're definitely not as formal and solemn as Catholicism, but they're also not as warm and musical and engaging as a Baptist church. There's this sort of like, they're more community oriented, and there's less of a one person reciting things, mm-hmm. and a lot more like, and now the kids are going to give a talk, and now everyone sings a song, and here's the choir, and here's that. But I think so many of us, even just from like media, look mm-hmm. at Baptist churches and are like, God damn, that's the way to worship. Wonderful music and high spirits and beautiful hats and just like,
oh, the hats are a thing.
Calling back, like if you feel the spirit, you're responding. Like mm-hmm. that's the sort of like, that's the kind of vibe I want if people are learning together or are celebrating something together. That feels like, fuck, yeah.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Ay, ay, ay. you know what? And I actually would love to talk about that. Was the Baptist church primarily black? Was it a mix?
It was primarily black.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think. Actually, no, I think it was all black. I was going back in my memory. I think it was. I mean, I think we every once in a while, you know, there was someone else that came in through the doors, but generally it was. And then across the street at the Catholic church, it was definitely a mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is that is, say what you will, but it is a pretty racially diverse group. It's well, because it made its way all over, I guess. It's one of the situations we're talking
that
about
it
here.
It did, yes.
Well, that's one of the things that this is like, especially right now, I think things are very, they're very charged with discussions about diversity.
Right.
And obviously there have been some very shocking, or not so shocking, but upsetting things that have happened mm-hmm. in recent days that sort of, up to and including the election of a president, you know, I think a lot of people are feeling this wave of just like dismay mm-hmm. of like, oh God, this is where we are. And then there are a lot of people who are like, Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't know this was where we were.
This is where we were.
We knew this is where we were. So I say this as a person who's like already apologetically naive about my experience in Atlanta. I'm from Arizona. There's a very big cultural mix there, but it's primarily Hispanic and Caucasian, and some Native American and definitely Black communities. But it's absolutely not like something like Atlanta, where for me, again, as a naive West Coast white person, I feel it's the most vibrant, culturally diverse and inclusive city that I've ever been in. That doesn't mean that there aren't neighborhoods that I'm sure vice versa are like, don't go there. But again, the limited experience, but just from my experience living there, the crews I worked with,
I would say that
the housing situations I was in, the stores I shopped at, all of that felt so much more like, hi, everyone looks each other in the eye and smiles at each other. And there just isn't like, there's something there that feels sometimes absent to me in other cities. And is that crazy or am I right?
Crazy. I mean, and it's interesting because, you know, obviously I grew up there, but the majority of my adult life, I haven't been there. So I kind of re-experience it every time I go home to visit for holidays or go to not shoot something. you know what I mean? So I am kind of learning the Atlanta that it has become.
Yeah.
Because there was definitely a change, like when the Olympics came, like that brought in a whole different kind of element. And then people started flocking for the industry. It started out for music. Like it was like a really big hub for music for a while. And then it kind of progressed into film and television. So it's been changing. But I think you're right. I think it's been changing for the better that as the years go on, as more industries come in, that it just is more inclusive in general.
Yeah. What was the makeup of your school? Like the performing arts school, is it pretty diverse?
Yeah, it was actually, I guess, primarily because it was performing arts. Yeah. So many of us, that school wasn't in our area. We were bused there because of the performing arts program. So yeah, we had a really good mix.
And were there other subjects in school that you were interested in, or were you sort of like, I'm impatient to get to my theater class. I have to sit through this other one.
I always wanted to get to the theater class, to chorus, to shop in terms of like building the sets. I always wanted to get to that stuff. I mean, even in college, I mean, I got a degree in broadcast journalism. I majored in extracurricular. I was in every club. Yeah, I was doing every project. I was in every organization. I was creating things, you know, whatever I could to kind of keep that creative hit going.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Did you have a favorite style of, like, would you get extra excited if like a very serious play was happening, or if there was something silly? Like, I of course was always, well, when I was in high school, I guess I had a lot of angst, so I also enjoyed these like heavy, like, sure, I know what it's like to really feel things kind of shows. But I also was very, like, one year we did like a murder farce kind of show, and I definitely was like, ooh, this feels good, or were you just like everything?
Well, we did a lot of musical theater. I mean, because we did, I'm trying to remember now exactly what the setup was, but we definitely did like a fall drama, and then there was the big spring musical. So everybody wanted to be in the big spring musical because it had, you know, more money and it was just much more grand.
Right.
So I did a lot of musical theater in high school, and then after I graduated and kind of went into the world.
Because you were looking out towards Broadway.
I was. And I still haven't gotten to Broadway yet.
You know what? Things can happen in all different kinds of orders. That's for damn sure.
Listen, I'm at any age, I am ready to go to Broadway.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to do it. I mean, I have to do it at least once. I mean, I want to do it more than once, but at least once. I mean, it's every theater kid's dream to be on Broadway.
Absolutely. Which now I'm like, God, was it mine? I guess it was. Like that, again, that was such a faraway thing for me. Like at least movies and television were right in front of me. So I could sort of understand those, but Broadway was like, there's nothing like that. And I mean, in Arizona, there's like a couple of plays happening, you know, and there would be touring companies that would come through. But
and see, for me, the idea of film and television was so far fetched. I mean, I it was out there, obviously, but I was in the theater, so we just thought Broadway is like the mecca.
sure, absolutely. And did you that experience of sort of have, because for me now that I do this, and I did come from theater. I mean, I did major in theater and all that. And so I had the familiarity of doing the same show over and over again, but now I'm so far away from that it's intimidating to me to imagine doing, you know, 4 months of the same show every,
I went back, not like I left it, but recently I went back to Atlanta to do a show, and not only was it not musical theater, you know, because I had been doing so much of that, I really hadn't done a straight play in a while. Mm-hmm. So this was so much fun because it was a straight play and it was comedy, which I don't get to do a lot of because people for some reason think I'm serious. Uh-huh. So they're like, oh no, comedy. But I love comedy, and it was so much fun because the character was absolutely not a thing like me in any way, nice. Context or form.
Yeah.
So I got a chance to really just wrap myself into this character and then do it night after night, and it'd be comedy. It was great. It was wonderful.
What was the play? What was the role?
It was What I Learned in Paris by Pearl Clegg. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I guess you could call it a political romance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think she'd be okay with me saying that.
Yeah.
It was set kind of in the history of Atlanta, so it felt like the roots of home too. It was just a lot of fun. Great cast. It was just great.
And,
home to the Alliance.
Oh, sure.
Because that
was,
you know, my original stomping ground.
Yeah. What was the character like that was so different from you?
She was young and naive, not only in the world, but in herself. Like, she truly had not found her voice yet. And so many voices around her were so robust that she just couldn't find it. Mm. And she was rebelling in her kind of like small passive aggressive ways until she really kind of came into her own sense of being by watching this other person who had found herself many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just, it was great. It was really fun.
Now, that, first of all, does sound super awesome. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I'm not trying to draw a parallel, but when you were talking about the idea of this person, of a person being around people who have strong voices, mm-hmm. that made me think of your grandmother, which made me think, like, especially when she came to live with you, what was that like growing up with somebody who was doing all this creative output and writing and showing her voice to the world and all of that? Like, was that...
Well, it was interesting because I come from a very creative family, but I'm the only one who decided to kind of make a living at it.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother, like I said, she was an English professor, but she was always, you know, she was also the Brownie troop leader, and she was also the director of student activities. So she was always doing things that somehow were creative in some way. My sister, I believe, maybe plays 8 instruments, something like that. Right, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Amazing.
And then my grandmother was a writer. So in the house, there was all kinds of stuff all the time. And in terms of a voice, yeah, I definitely took inspiration from my grandmother because my other career is that I'm a screenwriter. And I began writing so young because I was emulating my grandmother.
Absolutely.
And, so I always felt like the influences were there.
Yeah.
And I was just, I guess, the one that took the baton, decided to have the career that didn't necessarily guarantee me eating all the time.
Well,
that
there
was just
is
me.
That.
Everybody else was like, creative stuff, but here's my regular paycheck.
Yeah, and I get that. I mean, there was never a time for you where you sort of thought of it that way, where you, for like, because for me, I went through a phase where I had wanted that, and all of a sudden I was like, I got super practical and went, oh, I can't do this. Like, I'm going to have this, I'm going to pursue this whole other thing, and maybe I'll touch in with that as a hobby.
Well,
kind of like, and did you just ever...
I didn't think of it as a career when I was doing it. Like, when I was a kid, it was just, I was having a good time. I was expressing myself. This felt like home. And so I never really thought, oh, I want to do this for the rest of my life. I was just like, I want to keep doing this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I obviously wanted to go to Broadway. Mom and I made the deal. Then I went and got an education. And then I actually went back to school. Never thought I would do that. But I got bitten by the film bug. But I wanted to find out about the production aspect of it. So that's why I went and got my MFA in film. So then, and that's where I learned how to write movies, because I had been writing other things, but not necessarily, you know, screenplays. And so it was really after grad school that I said, okay, now what do I want my actual career to be? I think I'm stuck in this place because this is where I feel the most real.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it really became a decision. So then it was never, oh, maybe I should do something, you know, practical, quote unquote.
Right.
It was just, how do I keep doing this? So anything that I did that was quote unquote practical. I'm doing the air quotes just
to
so that you all know.
But yeah, I know.
So anything that I was doing that
was
practical, you can feel it.
Yeah.
You can feel the air quotes.
I can.
Nice. was just, how does that support what I really want to do?
Mm-hmm. What, and so for your, Wait, were you in Girl Scouts?
I was.
Your mom was.
Yes.
Okay, I got to get into that because I envy that so much.
You want to get into it now?
I want to get in right now. Okay. I'm going to go through the whole program. Okay. I'm hoping that no one will notice that I'm a full-grown adult. A tall one, no less. Mm-hmm. But no, that was one of those things. I talked about this recently on the podcast, and it wasn't with someone who had been a scout. So mm-hmm. it was like a conversation that couldn't really go that much further than like, you know, oh, it sounded cool to you too, right. I think. maybe. But that was one of those things that I just thought of as like, I could be the same age as a Girl Scout selling cookies. And it felt like, speaking of another world, mm-hmm. I didn't know how that girl had started in it. I didn't know how she, like, that was, it was like she was a different species. Like, oh, a Girl Scout. But I never had, no one ever asked me if I wanted to, you know what I mean?
To be a Girl Scout.
I didn't have any friends that I knew to be, you know, Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm. And I knew far more Eagle Scouts because that is a big deal for like Mormon boys. Mm-hmm. So again, another thing that's like, it's near me, but it's so far away.
Because
just boys get to do it. So so what was that like? Did you guys do like, did you make things? Were you out learning about nature?
Because
all those cute
buttons
and pins.
Oh!
It was so angry.
We sold the Girl Scout cookies. We went to camp and built fires and had you made necklaces out of Shrinky Dinks. I don't know if anybody remembers that. Shrinky Dinks. We would make our own little cushions so that we could go to outdoor events and put stuff together. And like I said, that was my mom. Like she was the arts and crafts queen. So it was perfect
for
her.
To be an educator mm-hmm. when that is beyond a full-time job mm-hmm. in comparison with so many jobs, to then have the energy to do something like Girl Scouts beyond that mm-hmm. is mind-blowing to me.
And
I respect that so much.
Before I was in the, so I was a brownie. So she was a brownie troop leader before I could actually be one. I was actually too young. So I would just kind of be hanging around the girls in the cute little brown outfits that I right. couldn't wear yet. So I just remember on my sixth birthday, waking up and being, Mom, I can be a brownie.
I can be official now. So yeah.
Absolutely. I kind of had that for a hot second about my dad who coached basketball and baseball mm-hmm. when I was really little at the high school, and then he stopped coaching. I think he coached tennis. He was very sporty, but then by the time I got there he wasn't coaching anymore. Mm-hmm. I feel like I was about like that about basketball for like a minute, and then in junior high when I really learned how to play it, I was like, "Oh, I'm terrible at this. Like I'll never just drop that and push it aside." But that feeling of having a parent that you look up to who has this community of slightly older but not their age, like to be like, "Oh, I'm so close. Mm-hmm. I'm so close." And they seem like this is so cool, and this is like a side of my dad's life that I can only look out in on, you know, kind of look in on. I can totally imagine that day being like, "Yes.
Yeah.
I made it."
And I still there are at least 4 or 5 of the girls that I was brownies with that I'm still like friends with today. Like
nice.
Just those lifelong friends
You
know, you've got so much history with, and they've got all of the, you know, the blackmail pictures. So
the blackmail pictures.
Oh my gosh. And then they post them on Facebook.
What those would be.
And like, would you take that down?
Like, start with a smile, end with a threat.
At least get a little bit of heads up, right?
Yeah, there's a lot. I think there's so much of that now on Facebook for me. So many pictures, and I'm like, oh boy, mm-hmm. that I just sort of like.
You have to just release it.
Yeah, I just had to go, great.
Or make phone
calls. I'm a human being. Let's all enjoy my humanity, mm-hmm. everybody. And what about like dating in high school? Was that something that you were, you know, some performing arts kids. There's such a wide swath of ways that can go. I have so many mm-hmm. people who are like, I'm like, oh, so you were in theater, probably did some making out and stuff. And then they were like, what? No one did any of that. And then other people are like, since she was theater department, like we were
there's
all
a bit
creative.
Of a mix.
And yeah.
For our program, there was definitely a bit of a mix. I wasn't, I think I maybe had 2-3 boyfriends in high school, and I use boyfriend very uh-huh. loosely. You know, it was like, ooh, we sat beside each other in class.
Right.
We're so meant to be, you know,
right,
that sort of thing. But yeah, we definitely had we had our fair share of people that we thought should get married for the amount of time they spent together, uh-huh. And others who just kind of looked at each other, you know, askance.
Longingly.
Yes,
yeah.
Right, exactly.
Did you were your family's expectations, or like, was that something that was sort of put out to you as part of your upbringing? Like,
to what?
You can go out on a date, or I don't want you dating until blank, or, you know, here's the rules as they exist for our household.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't really a big thing, you know, even in terms of like curfews. Like, my mom never gave me like a strict curfew. She just always said,
call me when you change locations. Mm-hmm. And as long as she knew where I was, you know, I had a pretty level head. She wasn't really worried about me doing anything crazy.
Yeah.
But even for dating, I mean, I think I went out on my official first date when I was 16. It was like a big deal. Like he had the car. We went to a play because, you know, whatever. Uh-huh. We went to a play. But it was, so that was like my official kind of like first date. You know, not long after that, I was in college. So,
yeah.
But we never really had this conversation where she said, okay, not until.
Right, right.
Because I think this is a theater kid thing too. You tend to hang out in groups.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't a lot of desire actually even for one-on-one because in the group you could just kind of pair off or whatever.
But. Mm-hmm. And you said you were doing theater outside of school too. Mm-hmm. And that's a, sort of an interesting way to be comfortable. Also, I'm guessing you're probably comfortable around adults just based on how you've mm-hmm. described your family and stuff. But that's also really different, right? Is like being a kid who not only is in your own peer group, but is probably in a peer group of people who are, you know, anywhere from 70 years old to 5 years old, depending yeah. on what the production is or depending on, you know, who's attracted to the community theater.
Yeah. And that was very interesting too, just because, and this kind of comes up with the Southern upbringing, like, there's just kind of a thing. I don't know if it's just my family or if it's a Southern thing. I think it's more of a Southern thing where you don't call adults by their first name or you put a miss in front of it. So it's, yeah. you know, it's Miss Carol.
Yeah.
You're gonna, you can use her first name,
gosh.
But you have to, as my grandmother used to say, put a handle on it.
Yeah. And being in Atlanta, and that is so mm-hmm. novel to me still after so many years, it mm-hmm. still is like, I think it's so charming and it feels so unnatural for me to do, but I kind of want to do it, but it feels like so, it just doesn't seem like something that would naturally,
yeah,
but
totally. But
it
just
falls
in the business,
out of people's mouths.
Kids call yeah. adults by their first name all the time. So it was an interesting like kind of dance that I would do.
Sure.
And
sure.
I think the rule of thumb is if they're old enough to be your parent,
yeah.
then they get a handle.
Gotcha.
Gotcha. Something
gotcha,
like that.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Definitely if they're old enough to be your grandparent.
Right.
So there
would right.
be times when, even now, you know, so now my friends, some of them who have children, will introduce their children to me. And then they're like, this is Kelsey. I'm like, Miss Kelsey.
You
know, but that's just me. That's just me. I'm still from the South.
Excuse me for a second. Can I talk to you for a second without you? Okay, great.
Right.
Great,
let's great. Have a conversation. Yeah.
Oh, it is. So those sort of. And that's a tricky thing too, is like, I think so, it's funny because the whole sort of, I mean, manners maketh a man may or may not be a phrase that sounds kind of familiar, but I'm not sure.
It sounds very formal.
Yeah. It sounds very formal.
Yes.
But it's funny when the sort of like the in-between of, you can tell a person who maybe doesn't have great manners, but who is, has nothing but good intentions versus
okay.
a person who is, knows all the right things to say, but like there's no respect behind them. That's sort
very
of
sad situations. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's something that was, you know, whatever manners were indoctrinated into me were sort of, I think it was more about, you know, just like, you know, when you know how to be respectful to someone, you know, mm-hmm. sort of be that person. But
so what are your like expectations in terms of chivalry?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, that then we get into the whole kind of gender play too,
mm-hmm,
which is
right.
which is very interesting. I hold doors open for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I hold doors open for old people, kids, adults. I will hold a door open for a guy who, with my own profiling, I probably will assume will like look at my ass after I open it for him because I'm so actively trying to be like equal opportunity. Uh-huh. Like, don't judge anyone. Like, you know what I mean? Like at a truck stop, you know, I'll be like, I am opening the door for this gentleman with his pot belly and his handlebar mustache and his like dirty shirt.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he's going to get the wrong idea, but I'm going to go ahead and open it for him because I would open it for the kid who walked in right before him. You know what
That's
I mean?
That's true. Yes.
So I think I was raised by a dad. And so I think while he was, you know, incredibly respectful, and I'm not like a daddy's little girl or anything like that, I'm also not a tomboy.
Mm-hmm.
I felt very genderless for a lot of my life. I think I sort of felt like, oh, I okay. kind of feel like I don't, you know, I didn't know how to really be super girly. But then I look at pictures of myself and I'm like, oh, my mom tied those ribbons in my hair. I couldn't have looked more like a little blonde right. blue-eyed angel, even if I was like, this is weird. So for that reason, I think I give out confusing signals about mm-hmm. what my expectations of chivalry are. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
I think I'm like,
but what are your
I'll
expectations?
Accept, okay, my expectations. I don't expect a guy to open a door for me. Mm-hmm. I probably, if I were asked to go out on, I mean, I'm not in this position now. I'm in a relationship, but mm-hmm. like being asked out on a date, I mean, I guess my expectation probably is that I'm going to be, if it's a cisgender, if it's like a man and a woman going out to a meal, uh-huh. I think I expect to be treated like I'm going to be taken to dinner, but it isn't because that's what I feel is right. It's mm-hmm. because that's just what everyone does. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I got it.
It just feels like that's like, oh, I'm supposed to expect this because I'm supposed to expect this. Or I expect this because that's what I'm supposed to expect.
Got it.
And so I think I would be a little weirded out if they're like, you want to split this? But like that, but
yeah.
But I don't, but can I really say like, because one is right and the other is wrong, or that is somehow disrespectful to me? That's all society stuff.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know that it's a right and wrong thing. I think it's the whole nurture thing anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, again, once again, in case you missed it, I'm from the South. Uh-huh. And so, no, but I, you know, and not only, you know, I mean, I was raised in Atlanta, but my mother was raised in South Carolina, mm-hmm. which somehow is more South than Atlanta.
But, yeah.
But it is, and very kind of old school values. So, yeah, I totally would expect for a gentleman to pick up the tab if he asks me out. Now, you know, it gets a little fuzzy once you get into the third and fourth and fifth and sixth date.
Right, right.
But the first day, absolutely. And yeah. While I don't expect it, I appreciate doors held open.
Yeah.
The car door or the, you know, the door to a building or that sort of thing like that. Yeah, I also have this thing, which actually my best friend put in my head. I didn't really have this before. My best friend is a guy. And so he doesn't allow a woman to walk on the traffic side of a sidewalk.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's apparently and he's from Chicago. So apparently yeah. that's a huge thing in Chicago, but it's also mm-hmm. a very Southern thing. And so I've in my day had to actually adjust, because now I don't feel comfortable walking on that side of the sidewalk. I was fine before he did that.
Right.
I was like, you've ruined me now. So now, first of all, if a guy doesn't know it, I'm like, don't you know I'm not supposed to walk
right.
there? And then if he puts me there, I will just shift around.
Yeah.
And then it gets a little awkward, but it seems like such a wonderful protective gesture
yeah.
that even if they don't offer it, I just make sure they do it.
Are you left-handed?
No.
Oh, you're right-handed.
Right-handed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking because I was realizing that, for some reason, I guess I don't know how I was holding my microphone, but all of a sudden I started thinking, the reason I asked this is because my boyfriend is left-handed. Mm-hmm. So what's funny about that is like, he's from Texas and he does have a lot of those, like he always opens the door for me. Even mm-hmm. like when we go into the garage where our cars are next to each other,
that's so sweet.
He will open the door for me and totally.
Mm-hmm.
And he does the traffic thing, but there's also a thing where because he's left-handed, sometimes things switch around, like where we sit and where we're walking, because because I'm right-handed and he's left-handed. So there's like a whole other weird
oh, wow.
thing that happens when someone's left-handed and you're right-handed that I didn't know anything about until all of a sudden I became aware of it a couple
troubles,
years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. So keep that in mind.
Okay.
But yeah. And I think what's interesting to me about that, is, and again, like, I don't mean to, you know, take too big of a deep dive into political stuff. It's mm-hmm. not really political stuff, I guess. But in terms of like feminism, is that's what's one of those interesting, you know, I just podcast a 17-year-old girl named Ruby who just wrote a book. Her mom founded Bust Magazine. She's a very vocal feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was kind of talking with her about like this idea of the construct of feminism, because there are women who would call themselves feminist who would also say like, well, Kelsey, you don't get to expect those things as a feminist.
Right.
As a feminist, mm-hmm. you should be opening the door just as much as da da da. Mm-hmm. But then someone else would say, well, isn't feminism just about women supporting each other and understanding
right.
that we all come from different places, and like if what's empowering for you is to be treated with that measure of respect, and that's your expectation as a woman, then how does that mean somehow that you're not allowed to be a feminist? Because a feminist is like, no, we're gonna throw all out the window.
Right.
Because if a man opens a door for you, that means he also owns you, because you're gonna take his last name, and that, you know, and you lose your identity and da da da. Like it's some people's opinion of it's this, you know, it's a slippery slope because it represents all these things. And then other people are like, yeah, but I don't have to feel those ways. The context we're talking about is this one time of this person opening a door for me. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think that also, I mean, for me, I mean, obviously I grew up with those expectations, but I, in terms of a relationship, I enjoy feeling cherished.
Yeah.
And so those small things, it's not, obviously I can open my door. Obviously I can pay for my meal. It's not that I am unable to or even unwilling to. It's the offer of it mm-hmm. that makes me feel like you are you constantly have my comfort in mind. You mm-hmm. constantly have my safety in mind.
Lovely.
You want to envelop me in your affection, mm-hmm. and that is appealing to me. Yeah. So I feel like that isn't even a part of the feminist argument. Like, that's just how I like to be treated.
Yeah.
And yes, it's absolutely colored by my upbringing,
right.
but not dictated by it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's perfectly said. I shouldn't be surprised from a theater / public speaker / Did you ever do any of the debate kind of stuff?
I didn't do debate,
that also
but I did
terrified
do just speeches.
Person.
You know, I did do yeah. those competitions and such.
Were there people in your circles doing debate?
I find that I know so intimidating. Yeah, we didn't have like a debate.
It really
club
makes my heart race to think about arguing with someone in a like.
Oh, but
a,
see, I love an animated discussion now. I might not have been in the debate club, but yeah. I am. What my favorite course in college was logic.
Okay.
I kept my textbook because that just makes sense to me. Just like, you know, if we're discussing something, if we're going back and forth, we can absolutely have different viewpoints,
yeah.
but let's look at things logically. Let's not kind of like get over emotional about it, which is very odd coming from an actor, but that's,
well, I don't know.
But
There's
I,
that.
But I love, yeah. So I love animated discussion
yeah.
and I love, and I'm actually very, I'm very wary of people who can't have it, who
mm-hmm.
feel like if we disagree, it is automatically an argument.
Right, right.
You know, because we didn't, I mean, something that in my household, we didn't even raise our voices. Like, we never argued.
Right.
We discussed things. And I remember actually one time we were sitting at the Thanksgiving table, and it was me and my sister and the gentleman that my mother was dating at the time. And so my sister and I were discussing something because we had disagreed. And so we're talking back and forth. And finally he says, "Oh, just hit her." It was the best thing ever. He was like, "Come on, just get into a fight." Sorry, we don't do that, sir. But would you pass the turkey?
That's amazing. No, I couldn't agree more. I think having those conversations, God, what did I just see? Oh, it was on Ozark. Did you watch that?
I did watch Ozark.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, so,
have you watched the whole thing?
No.
This is not a spoiler
okay,
in any way, shape,
that.
Or form.
Okay, appreciate that.
But there's a moment this is not spoiling anything, that we can agree that the husband and wife character are having issues.
Yes.
They're in a challenging situation.
Yes.
And there is just a moment when, and I don't know, it might be actually much earlier in the season, but there is a moment when someone basically overhears them arguing and says, you know, "If my wife and I had it out like that, we might still be together."
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that line. I was like, "Oh, that's great writing."
That's right.
Because that is, that's sort of,
it's
like, if it's respectful communication,
right.
then, you know, that's one thing. And I guess that means different things to different people. Maybe
right.
some people do, because of their upbringing or not, love to scream at each other
mm-hmm.
and they both know they're still safe
mm-hmm.
and that they're still loved. And then they push past that and then they, you know, feel great and have kind of aired their grievances. And then other people, maybe it needs to be more measured and it needs to be a little bit more like, "I don't mean this in this way," you know.
Right.
But that idea of conflict, maybe not arguing, but conflict being discussed and resolved and respected is huge, right? I mean, it really is.
Absolutely.
Like massively important. Otherwise you just
personally,
either you're timid and you don't
everywhere.
Have your own opinions, or you know, potentially are like stewing on things, or, you know.
Oh, that's exactly what I say. I mean, if I get quiet, that's actually the most dangerous part.
Right.
When I stop communicating,
yeah.
I've stopped caring.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that's when it's just all, you know, all gone.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really interesting. Do you have a way of dealing with people who are combative in a conversation or in a behavior, whether they're people that you know or people that you've just met or whatever, that you feel like works for you, where, you know, you don't? Because I'm asking that as a person mm-hmm. who, I don't know that I have like my thing I do, but I do know that there are times when I probably could have handled something better. Do you know what I mean?
I think that, though I never really kind of thought about it, I was just thinking about situations where people were. So for people that I know, if we're in a situation and they, you know, become, you know, much more animated than I am comfortable uh-huh. with, then usually I point out their behavior. Because
mm-hmm.
I think, and I could just be wrong, but I think that people who start kind of yelling and flailing and going off the rocker don't see it. Like
mm-hmm.
it's a natural progression
mm-hmm.
for them, but they are, that no one holds a mirror up to
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll say something like, "Can we have the rest of this conversation without you raising your voice?"
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, or, you know, "There's no need for profanity."
Right, right.
Or
right.
"If you don't want to listen to what I have to say, that I feel like we shouldn't have the conversation," because
right.
then we're not actually communicating. I just,
right.
you know, I do the logic thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And for people I
don't know. I don't know that I've really kind of been in a lot of those situations, but I tend to get quiet because if I don't know you, I don't kind of really care about us having any future of communication, then really it's about just getting through it so I can get to whatever's beyond you. Mm-hmm. So I don't feed it.
That makes sense. I was thinking of the thing that some people do, and I know I've done this before, where it's like there's something that we all probably do at one point or other in our lives if we're upset or if we're reacting in a certain way that we also know that we as people never want anyone to do with us, which is that withering, like, okay, first of all, calm down.
Oh. You're like,
No. Like, no, I've said it to people and I have known as I've said it.
You've told people to calm down?
I'm sure as like in like a relation, like in a bad relationship where somebody is just like has histrionics, this is not my go-to, but I can specifically remember like two times when I've done it where I have known as like a 25-year-old, like, I know what I'm saying is an insult. It is not really me respectfully asking someone to calm down. And I sure as hell have had people do that to me, you know, once in a while in my life to have someone be like, wow, okay, you need to calm down. It's like, and if I hear anyone doing that in any context, sound like I'm always words. Like,
sound like somebody taking off their earrings.
You're like, well, there's an example of you're quote unquote saying something that's supposed to de-escalate, and we all know you're escalating. Mm-hmm. You are 100% escalating this.
I think actually in those situations, I try to remember someone's love language. Because my love language is touch. And so if I'm in the middle of something where I'm really upset and the person like just puts a hand on my hand, it will instantly have I'll okay, so you really do care, right? So I think if you know,
let's talk about love language for a second, because that's not necessarily something that everybody thinks of as a term. But I think I've talked about maybe on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. But give other examples of
so there's physical touch, there's acts of service, there are gifts,
praise. I think
words of affirmation.
Maybe, yeah,
and then there's one more that I can't remember right now because there are five of them.
There's five.
Yes, somebody Google it.
Google for sure.
There are five of them, and then you have like your primary love language, and then you kind of have your secondary one. And so my primary is definitely touch. What's yours?
God, that's a great question. is humor one? And I don't mean that as it's not, but like if I can step back from the situation enough to like, if I love someone, and we are in conflict, if there is a way that I can step outside of my own pride long enough to, laugh at something, if I'm real, like sometimes like if I get kooky, if I'm like, well, I feel like da da da, there is some part of me, and I don't know if it's because I have done comedy for so long, that can step out and sort of look at the me that's doing that and be like, oh, girl, bless your heart.
What are you doing?
Did you just say, nuh-uh, like a five-year-old? Like, if I can do that, even if I don't share it with the other person, usually I can de-escalate myself because I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's come to that. But sometimes I even will say, like, and I know I'm really upset right now, and I realized just now that I sounded like I was five. Like, if I can sort of get meta for a second, I feel like that definitely helps diffuse things, and vice versa, if somebody else is kind of willing to go. Because that's like an acknowledgement of, at some point, we won't be here.
Right.
And we'll be able to talk about this, or we'll be able to laugh about it, or whatever. That sort of, like, future, like, jumping ahead for a second.
But outside of conflict, like, what is most appealing to you from the person that you love?
Is one of them like time? I think it's time.
Yes, it's quality time.
I think that's what it is. I think it's like I really feel the absence of, particularly in a, like in a romantic relationship, I need that quality time, not just for me to receive love, but to give love, because otherwise I have a million other things I'm doing, and that part of me will just be like, oh, okay, I'll just go in that box until I'm needed again. And then a year passes. So I think it's probably quality
totally
time.
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. To have.
And the one that I forgot, apparently. Maybe I'm not very good at that one.
Well, you can't. I mean, if you need touch, you kind of need to be near the person. So that suggests that quality time will probably be happening. Yes. Yeah. But like gifts, I don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Look, I like gifts. Yeah. Let me not just like, you know, shaw them.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, but they don't, they don't say I love you to me.
Which, but, and I don't mean to say I don't give a shit about them. Like that's an act of disrespect.
Right.
I think part of it is that I'm very aware that I already have a lot of belonging. Mm-hmm. So if it's a gift of an experience, but even that, it's funny. Maybe that's because it's like I sort of take care of myself in those ways. And mm-hmm. So the person that you're with having those experiences becomes more important than like the experience itself or, you know, the bauble.
The bauble.
Who gives each other baubles? What is this, the Renaissance?
Yeah, right. I think my secondary one would be acts of service. I think I think I would much rather you do something small.
Yeah.
You know, like take out the garbage. Honestly, that's
totally
really, really sexy. Totally. So, you know, take out the garbage or do the dishes or rub my feet. That'd be great. That's kind of the combination of touch and acts of service.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that those are the, like, I definitely need physical touch. And then I appreciate like the little things. Mm-hmm. And so the acts of service thing, like that makes a big impact on me.
I agree. I think that's something that I feel like I've like really understood better as I've gotten older, which is that those acts of service really do truly translate to actions speak louder than words sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that if somebody is, particularly if someone's doing something not out of habit, but out of choice, then it really feels like you're thinking about my well-being. You're thinking about how your actions affect my well-being. And that is terribly sexy.
Yeah.
It really
Maybe
is.
That's how I view chivalry, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why it's appealing to me, because it's an act of service. It's I am protecting you so you don't walk on the traffic side. I am caring about your comfort, so I pull out your chair. I don't know.
I think it makes sense. I mean, yeah.
Think about that later.
Anything like that. And also recognizing that in yourself. Like, God, it makes me feel good to make this thing that I know someone loves, or to do this thing I know they don't want to do. So I'm doing it for them. Like, I may not even enjoy it, but it's so satisfying to me that someone else would be like, oh,
right.
Thank you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Whereas, and for me, I'm an only child. So that's not always, you know, that like I'm used to taking care of myself and doing things for myself. And so I think like when you really are in a situation of friendship, a relationship, anything like that, where you feel that give and take, it's really special.
I agree.
It reminds us that we're social creatures. You know, we're not lone wolves, like just off by ourselves.
Right.
For the most part. Killing our food and eating it. I don't know where I'm going with
this. For the most part. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Let me get into this mash game, Kelsey. This has been such a light and a joy.
Oh, yeah, this has been great.
No pressure. So I'm going to try to, and zero pressure, and also like just flex your improv muscles, because this is like suddenly I'm asking you to make very quick decisions, spur of the moment.
Yeah, okay.
But the first category that I'm going to give it to you, based on, some of these will be based on things we've talked about.
Uh-oh.
The first category is give me three... Let me give you three musicals that you would want to do on Broadway.
And I could already have done them elsewhere?
You can already have done them elsewhere. And it can be like, this is a total fantasy world. So it could be like, this character I would never get cast as, male or female.
Ah,
I'm too old to play this person now.
Wow.
Nope, not in this world. It's like, the sky's the limit.
Okay. Hamilton's first.
Great.
Would love to do Hamilton. I would love to do Guys and Dolls. And my favorite musical in the world is Once on This Island. I would love to do it on Broadway.
Wait, what is it?
Once on This Island.
Once on This Island? I've never seen it.
You must. It's amazing.
What's it about?
It's essentially about this peasant girl who dreams larger than her situation. It's very like a Cinderella-esque story.
Yeah.
And then she gets what she wants at her own peril.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
sounds like a classic grim fairy tale, sort
almost,
of like
almost,
the Little
yeah.
Mermaid kind of thing. I'm talking about the original Little Mermaid.
They compare it to the Little Mermaid all the time. So yes.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And now you have to look it up.
I do have to look it up, and I will look it up. Okay. Three people from today, from history, anytime, living or dead, that in this MASH fantasy world, you sort of have like the bat phone too, where you can just like pick up the phone and that person, whoever it is like, oh my God, Kelsey, I'm so happy to hear from you. And then you're like, okay, well, I want to ask your advice about something.
Wow. Okay. My mom.
Great.
wow, three people in this world or the next. Wow. That's such a great question. I want to spend more time on it.
I know.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I know. It's, I ask these like our hardcore questions.
I know.
Questions,
those, I mean,
like,
those are like
anyway,
really, really,
think?
Really great questions. Okay. 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 I'm three people. You didn't say three women. You just said three people,
anyway.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Okay. I'm filling the time with okays.
Everyone has their own solution.
I know.
Some people say okay. Some people are dead quiet. And then some people like... three people, like just a quiet,
yeah,
like I'm repeating the question.
I know, saying it over and over again because I just want to pick like the right people.
I
okay,
know. I'm sorry, type A.
Say,
as no, an, as a fellow type A, I'm sorry.
Michelle Obama.
Great, 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 great.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay, and then I'm gonna say. I know, right?
No. Moved on to a slightly different filler. And then following that thing I just said, I will...
And I don't really know why I'm saying this name.
I like that, though. I like
it. But I'm
going
to say it anyway. Shirley Chisholm.
Oh, okay, great.
I don't... it just came into my head, so I'm going to... Let's do the gut. Yeah.
I love it. Okay. That was good. That was like three totally...
So weird.
They came from three different parts
of you. Yeah, no, they really did.
Which I love. Okay, okay, this is a one that I have to include every time because I love food. Three types of food... Three foods that in this universe, instead of being bad for you, fatty for you, hard, too hard to get because they're back home, XYZ, this is something that is... three things that in this world are actually good for you. You can have them in perpetuity. No negative ramifications of any kind.
Okay. What's the name of that ice cream? It's got like caramel and pralines and cream ice cream.
Ooh,
pralines and cream ice cream. Paella.
Mm-hmm. This is how the game is played.
Yes. I'm literally like dreaming of it right now. Paella and... I'm doing two sweets and
right.
Bread pudding with bourbon sauce.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh my gosh. Now I'm going to have to go ride a bike.
Okay.
Like, even my thoughts are fatty.
Oh, okay. No. Okay. Let's do three skills that you wake up with tomorrow morning and you've sort of downloaded Matrix style. It's like, I know Kung Fu. Like you wake up tomorrow and you're an expert at three things. And it doesn't have to be physical. It could be like, you know how to fix computers. You can speak every language, anything like that.
Yes. I'm multilingual.
Great.
Always wanted that. I finally have mastered the piano.
Great.
And I know to swim.
Great, 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 great. Okay. Next category, let's do three. Oh, well, I got to do this one because there's got to be a romantic category.
Oh, gosh.
Three guys who are, listen, they could be characters from movies, books. It doesn't have to be a real person. It certainly can be. Living or dead at any age. It could be, you know, ex at, you know, when he was in blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Three.
Just three that I have a crush on.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
Because this is like alternate universe, like
alternate
sexy
universe,
times
right.
or husband, alternate universe husband, whatever.
Oh, wow. Okay, I can't remember his character name right now. Okay, Sterling K. Brown plays him in This Is Us.
Oh, great.
I can't remember his character name, though.
I can't either because I always think of how awesome Sterling K. Brown is. So
right,
but I just call him Sterling.
Wait, what's his name, though? That's going
to
bug me now. Okay, that's fine. But I just,
I need an intern that can shout these things out.
I love their couple interactions.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
He's brilliant.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Well, then in that case, I have to go with President Obama. I mean, again, it's how they interact with with the person that they love. I just love how they love.
Yes.
Aww, I love how they
that.
Love.
Sorry. I absolutely love that.
I just awed my own comment. Okay.
You're entitled.
All right. And then I don't know. Just somebody, a character from a something held on. Maybe
adorable,
like
movie.
Maybe Richard Gere's character from Officer and a Gentleman.
Oh,
just you know, kind of like at the end.
Yeah.
Knowing what you want and coming to get your woman. Mm-hmm, why is it okay? It is a romantic category. I was about to
it's great. Oh,
call
it's
myself non-feminist again, but I was like, wait, no, that's the category. Okay,
we talked about it.
We talked about it.
You're safe. You're totally safe. Let's do three places in the world that, if getting there were no problem, that you would have a vacation home.
Oh, I have a vacation home. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That.
And it will either be a mansion, apartment, shack, or house. FYI, you can't control that.
I can't control it.
That's it's okay. In the cards.
Great. Italy.
Great.
South Africa. And if getting there was no problem, Costa Rica.
Great. Okay. Next category is, and this involves some selfishness on your part. I want you to know this is the place to do it.
Okay.
But, there are three screenplays that are pre-existing that are absolutely brilliant that you love. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be, everyone thinks they're brilliant, but you love.
Okay.
That, many people don't realize, but you actually ghost wrote it. So this is, we're going to out you as like, oh, you wrote, you know, The Godfather or whatever. So three, favorite screenplays that you wrote.
Oh,
it turns out.
Wow. Okay. So, wow. That's good. That's really good. Okay. So I wrote, okay. So for Vintage Sake, I wrote Mahogany.
Oh, wonderful.
I don't know. I just love the way the finished product turned out. So I wrote Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, great. Yep.
And wow, this is such a great question.
It's good because it leaves you with things to think about as you leave. And inevitably, you'll probably end up being like, oh, I wish I would have said that. But then you'll be like, oh, but I do want to watch that.
I'll probably email you. And I'll say, can you just put this in the comments section?
I'll take it. Right? I absolutely will. I'm happy to do it.
What did I write? I wrote... Oh, this is so hard. Okay, I have to do a romantic comedy because I love romantic comedy.
Oh, yeah, sure, great.
I think... that was a good one, but then I'm like, how about that one? Okay, all right. I'll just say... Okay, so I wrote a mashup. See me cheating?
Oh, I see what's happening here.
A mashup of The Proposal.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, I'm just going to go with The Proposal. Okay, I just like it. I'm just going to go with The Proposal.
Great.
There was, Pretty Woman was in there, but I just can't do the one about the prostitute. I can't do it. Okay, so yeah, I did The
Understood.
Proposal.
Understood. I see what we were thinking there, yes. And I understand, and I support your decision.
Thank you.
Okay, and then final category for you is three... Let's do, this is intense, but three like real or fictitious villains that you basically like overcome for everyone. And it can be like silly or it can be intense. Like it can be like Donald Trump, but it could also be like, oh my God, I would love to go up. Yeah, sure. Seriously. Yeah. But you'd be like, but it would be amazing to go up against like Ursula from The Little Mermaid or, so-and-so. Like three things that you're basically like a superhero who conquers three people, three characters.
Okay. I have to put Donald Trump in there.
Let's get that right in there. Let's save us all.
See, it's a super villain. Okay, and then on the more fun side, who would I defeat? I think that all the clones in the Matrix, that'd be cool if I was, I'd be Nia as opposed to Neo. I did that. You're welcome.
Love it.
And then let's see, because that'd just be a fun movie to be in. And then a supervillain.
Well, let me say that the reason that I'm thought of this is I don't know why I thought of it, but all of a sudden I thought, listen, I'm not the most diehard Game of Thrones fan. I'm really not, but I do enjoy it.
Okay.
There was a period of time in which I was like watching it because I was like, I hope this gets good again. and that arguably I was just not into it, but it was as good as ever. I don't know. Having said all of that,
yes,
there are a few evil creatures I have wanted to personally be able to get rid of more than those blue-eyed dead people.
It's
okay if you don't watch it.
Don't.
But that's, I have seen, but that's, I have seen but a single that is episode. One that's yes. one of those mm-hmm. ones that's so effective to me. Mm-hmm. That was sort of where I was going with it. It's so effective that it like angers me that I cannot also participate in fighting against it. Whereas a lot of times I'll just be watching something like, okay, got it. Good people, bad people. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Good luck, good people. For some reason that one really is like, oh, why are they still alive? Or dead or whatever it is they are.
Okay. I had to get it out there.
I
see it. I'm trying to think of my third villain. Okay. And you gave me so much time. It was so nice. I was trying to like tune in and tune out at the same time.
Oh, no, that
so
was just me listening
great,
to the sound of my voice.
Great.
So don't worry.
It was
worry.
Wonderful. Okay. Villains. I am going to say, Bad Hair Day. That's my villain, Bad Hair Day.
That, my friend, is a very good answer.
Thank you.
It's a very good answer. Okay. All right. So now I'm just going to do that little squiggle thing where that helps me determine what you end up with. So just tell me when to stop.
Ooh.
This is unprecedented. I'm going to pause this. I'm going to do a little calculating. I'm going to come back and give you your 100% guaranteed MASH fictitious future.
All right.
Stay tuned. To you, it will seem as if no time has passed. All right. I feel good about this. I feel very good about this.
Here we go.
First of all, I want to congratulate on your beautiful house in Costa Rica.
Thanks.
Gorgeous. I don't know if you were able to afford this beautiful house because some of that proposal money is rolling in,
nice.
But you did write that screenplay. So congratulations and thank you. I know that you resisted the Pretty Woman one, but I want you to rest assured that you did end up with Richard Gere from Officer and Gentleman's
okay,
character.
Okay, there we go.
So you've got him. I'm assuming that where you are in Costa Rica is near water because you are a master swimmer.
Love this.
I want you to rest assured that when you come in from a long swim and you're hungry and you're like, ugh, what should I eat? That's gone for me. In this universe, bread pudding with Burman sauce is the way to go. As much as you want, as long as you want, you'll feel great and you'll look great. I want to, listen, I don't know what was going on with your gut, but you can contact Shirley Chisholm when you need to.
Nice.
So whatever's going on in there that like she's accessing, you're welcome.
All right.
I want to say I have loved the performance. I know you've been headlining in Hamilton. So great stuff there. And perhaps most importantly, we all, and when I say all, I mean 99% of the listeners of this podcast. If you're one of the 1%, I really apologize. But your defeat of Donald Trump.
Yes. Nice.
Has helped many people.
I love it.
And I want to add that that does not mean that the vice president becomes president. That's a little extra surprise I forgot to include. Kelsey, where can people find you? What would you like them to know about? What can they check out? Congratulations on your Emmy nomination.
Thank you.
And just tell us where you are and how to find you and all that good stuff.
On all the social stuff, you can find me at Ms. Kelsey Scott. M.S. Kelsey Scott.
We know you've got like the Ms. in front of
it's
it because
the
you're
Ms.
from the South.
The handle
Ms. Kelsey.
On it. Right, yeah, and after you know, specify that it's not the Miss. Because
that's right.
For the younger
that's
ladies,
right. That's
you
right.
go for yes, yes. So at Ms. Kelsey Scott on Twitter and on Instagram and on Facebook, and in terms of what's happening now, you can still actually see the Emmy nominated episodes of Fear the Walking Dead Passage on AMC.com.
Nice.
So go on there, scroll up, take a look.
Yeah.
Loved having the action that I spoke to the universe about.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. It's hard though, huh? It's a whole different.
It's hard and hard
fish.
On you. When I tell you that I still have
Dude.
Like. Bruises and yeah,
I have a neck injury. Like, and I'm on a horror comedy. This was like, oh yeah,
right.
I guess if you're making fun of action shows, you're still doing action.
Yeah, you
got
still
it, got
are.
It, got
those
it.
Those are still falls.
Great, great,
yeah,
great.
Still, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
It still bleeds. Yeah,
listen, we're very
yes.
lucky. Kelsey, thank you so much.
Thank you for having
and,
me. This was such fun.
I'm so glad. Guys, I'll talk to you next time on the podcast.
Bye.
Bye.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.